for tuning into the Molloy program. We deeply appreciate it. Stick around, all you half-witted conservatives. You may learn something tonight. I doubt it, though. This hour is sponsored by Bill Monroe, who writes, "Our day will come, truth seekers," from Bill in Rhode Island. Thank you, Bill. Hey, did you hear anything about this today? You know, in Davos, the world's capitalists are meeting, as they do every year, to decide how to carve up what's left of the planet's natural resources and how to further exploit and destroy the working class. And they do this every year. The guest list to these events is pretty awesome. It takes about $500,000 to get on the guest list. That's what you have to pay for the ticket and your flight and your hotel and so on and so forth. So it's not for the common folk like you or me. It's for the capitalist pigs who are destroying the planet. Well, this is the first line. This is out of Davos, Switzerland, which is where these bugs are meeting. "A small explosion caused some broken glass, but no injuries on Thursday morning at a four-star hotel in Davos, not far from the main meeting center of the World Capitalist Pig Forum." Oops, I'm sorry. World Economic Forum. There you go. "A spokesman for the police in Davos said there had been a, quote, little detonation," end quote, in an underground storage area of the Post Hotel Morosani around 9 a.m. local time. "Some windows were broken, but no one was hurt," the police said. The federal authorities have taken control of the situation. "In the tactical interests of the inquiry, they were disclosing nothing," according to a statement issued by the Attorney General of Switzerland. It was such a tiny event, I guess, that the American press decided, I don't know about the foreign press, the American press decided not to report on it at all, maybe to stave off any attempt to do a copycat bombing, only a little bit more effectively, you think? According to the report here, the blast was the first sign of trouble at this year's World Economic Forum, and I like this, which has a history of attracting protests from anti-globalization anarchists and other groups. That would be me. Anti-globalization anarchists and other groups. How about just common people who are tired of having our asses carved up and our natural resources divided by some predatory gangster capitalist that sits on his rather large ass and makes these decisions? Nah, couldn't be. It's just anti-globalization anarchists and other groups who are responsible for any trouble at the World Economic Forum. A small explosion in Davos. Well, have you heard anything about it? I haven't. The report on how the predatory capitalists in this country caused the financial crisis is out. And just like everything else that is of any value in these reports, the Republicans deny everything. There were four Republican thugs on this panel and six normal people. The panel investigating the roots of the crisis says the meltdown occurred because government officials and Wall Street executives ignored warning signs and failed to manage risks. It's called the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, FCIC. They determined in a final report released today that the causes of what happened in 2007, middle of 2007, are very clear. It's bright lines of responsibility all over the place. Of course, Republican rat bastards never take, not only are they, not only are they liars and cowards, but they never take responsibility for anything. Never. It's always, oh, it's a bunch of poor people that caused it. Oh, it's a bunch of immigrants that caused it. Oh, it's a bunch of brown people that caused it. Oh, it's a bunch of liberals that caused it. You cowardly punks. The crisis could have been avoided, the commission said. It could have been avoided. The Bush and Clinton administrations, the current and previous Federal Reserve chairman, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, all bear some responsibility for allowing the crisis to happen, the panel says. It also criticizes the bankers who got rich by creating trillions of dollars of horse crap and then selling it around the planet. The deals grew so complex. I mean, horse crap is horse crap, but you put a huge truckload of horse crap in the hands of the Wall Street capitalists, they'll turn it into perfumed bonds that everybody in, on the planet, oh, give me some horse crap. This is exactly what happened. The deals grew so complex, the commission said, that bank executives and regulators themselves did not understand them. And the banks didn't want any oversight of their activities. Get out of here! Get out of here! We're making sausage. We're raping two-year-olds in here. Get out of here! We're burning people at the stake in here. Get out of here! We're doing all kinds of evil stuff. Get out! That was the attitude. The conclusions contradict a parade of witnesses that appeared before the commission during these hearings, who said the crisis couldn't have been avoided or prevented. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke and Goldman Sachs Group CEO Lloyd Blankfein were among those asserting that defense. Oh, it couldn't have been stopped. Oh, we didn't have anything to do with it. It was just, you know, like gravity. It just happened, you know? The report said, quote, the greatest tragedy would be to accept the refrain that no one could have seen this coming and thus nothing could have been done. If we accept this notion, it will happen again, end quote. The commission also singles out decisions by, quote, regulators, end quote, who believed this filthy, disgusting... I'm trying to think of words I can use on the radio. This filthy, disgusting... financial services industry, insurance industry, that somehow they could police themselves. That was the big mistake. Look, these are goddamn bandits. These are thieves, knaves, liars, sneaks, cheats, every single one of them. They will steal your blind. Then they'll steal your baby's diaper. Then they'll steal everything out of your house. They are thieves. They should be put on trial. They really should. They should be put on trial and charged with trying to destroy not just this civilization, but all civilization. And then, if they're found guilty, they should be taken out and hanged. Give them a trial, and if the evidence is there, these are capital crimes. How many people died? How many people were murdered because these rat bastards in Wall Street did what they did? How many people? 10? A million? 10 million. Put them on trial. No one. Now, remember after the SNL crisis, a whole bunch of people went to prison. SNL executives. Do you know who's been put on trial so far? In this one, nobody. Put them on trial. If they're found guilty, hang them. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Ease the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. And this hour is sponsored by Bill in Providence, Rhode Island, whose message is, "Our day will come, truth seekers." Thank you, Bill. We're going to try to get the situation in the Middle East tonight, too. Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen. Yemen is the one to really keep your eye. Well, Egypt, too. It's finally beginning to happen, I think, in some of these countries that the United States have supported all these years, the dictatorships. Tunisia was the first one. The president there has resigned, fled the country. A complete dictator, but one that the Bush crime family got along with great. Egypt, Mubarak has been in charge for almost 31 years, ever since Anwar Sadat was assassinated. God knows Mubarak might have had something to do with the assassination. But he's been our good friend, our dictator friend in Egypt. We have sent who knows how many renditioned suspects, people that we decided, or the CIA decided, needed to be tortured. So they would send them to Egypt, where they would be tortured, really tortured. And the people of Egypt know this. The people of these Middle Eastern countries, this is the joke on the United States, on the citizens of our country, because we are so goddamn ignorant of this stuff, and we refuse to educate ourselves. We utterly and absolutely refuse to educate ourselves as to why the people in the Muslim countries hate us now with a blood passion. We have been supporting with money and weaponry all sorts of repressive regimes in the Middle East, Arabic regimes in the Middle East, for decades. Saddam Hussein was one. The Shah of Iran was another. Mubarak is another. Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria. I mean, just keep going. Yemen. What about, what's the little country that the first Gulf War, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia? And the thing is, the people of the Middle East, these poor, oppressed and suppressed Islamic people who are beaten into a bloody pulp by their crazy religion, much the same way that Christian fundamentalists in this country are beaten to a bloody psychic pulp with this crazy Christian fundamentalism. And the people in these Islamic countries have finally, pretty much, it appears, have had enough. So if you want to know why they hate us, it's because we support dictators who turn around and kill the citizens of their own countries, torture the citizens of their own countries, deny basic human rights to the citizens of their own countries, deny political rights to the citizens of their own countries. And who has kept these dictators in power decade after decade after decade? Who? Bingo! The United States. So if you ever wake up at 3 a.m., and you sit bolt upright in your bed and you say to yourself, "Damn, why do they hate us? Why? Why?" And start rending your pajamas if you sleep in pajamas. Just recognize the answer. This is why they hate us. Just look at the news starting last week with the riots in Tunisia, the revolution in Tunisia. Now it's a revolution, and tomorrow is going to be a monster in Egypt. Tomorrow is going to be a monster. Reports are saying, and I'm not talking about reports from media, I'm talking about reports from social media, from Facebook, from Twitter, from all these, from the internet. Tomorrow, from, I think it's 7 mosques and 4 Christian churches in various parts, or it may all be in Cairo, people are being asked to gather and to begin to march to the center of Cairo. And along the march route, they are asking for people to join them. Now, tomorrow could very well be the day when one of two or three different things happen, maybe a combination of all three, Anwar Sadat, I'm sorry, he's dead, Hosni Mubarak resigns, many hundreds of people are shot down in the streets by the Egyptian authorities, total uncontrollable chaos reigns in Egypt, or a combination of all three. Mohammed al-Baradei, the guy who is the head of the Atomic Energy Commission for the United Nations, is an Egyptian. He has returned home and is going to be involved in the demonstrations. As a matter of fact, has made it very clear he'd like to be the next president. So tomorrow, when Egypt explodes, completely erupts, look for other countries in the Middle East to do the same. Now, if Yemen, if the situation in Yemen is not brought under control very quickly, that means a lot of people killed by the Saudis, then the next one to fall will be Saudi Arabia. Hold on to your ass, truth seekers. It's going to be a wild ride. We'll be right back.
With his colors flying high and his gun in hand, volunteered to fight and die.
Talk radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Thanks to Bill in Providence, Rhode Island for sponsoring this hour. His message, our day will come, truth seekers. Last night I said there was a topic I wanted to talk about tonight, and it'll come up later in the program, probably during the last hour of the program, that probably infuriates me more than anything I've done in a long time. And it's a story out of Ohio, Akron, Ohio. So stick around. And again, the situation in the Middle East, this was very predictive. People have been talking about when the day would come when people who have been oppressed for so long. And not just to here's the irony. A lot of Arabic speakers, a lot of the Muslim populations of these countries in the Middle East have been oppressed by their own dictatorships and their own royal families, dictatorships and royal families that we have, for the most part, always supported. Because capitalism, especially gangster capitalism, which is what we practice in this country, works best when there's no opposition, when there's no such thing like democracy, small d, oh, well, what is that? Oh, my God. When there's no such thing as a parliament, when there's no such thing as universal suffrage, when only certain elites are allowed to vote. So capitalism loves that. And will do anything to keep that going. So we have, under the guise of picking sides in the Cold War, so-called between the United States and the Soviet Union, we decided to back publicly Israel. But privately, we have made sure that these repressive, autocratic, dictator regimes in the Middle East and beyond stayed in power. This is how gangster capitalism works. It's how it always works. Now, the people who had been oppressed, they knew that, A, they had in their midst the Israelis, whom they hate for a very simple reason. The Israelis showed up and said, we're taking that little piece, that little country there. We're moving you out. We're taking it. That's the perception on the part of the Palestinians and a lot of Arab speakers. It doesn't make any difference. History this, history that. Forget about it. I'm talking about the gut-level feeling that came as a result of the establishment sanctioned by the United Nations and supported by the West of the establishment of the State of Israel. The Arab speakers, the Muslim countries over there, and the Arab speaking Christians, the Arab speaking didn't have to be Muslim. The people over there saw that and they said, what the hell? Or the Arabic equivalent. Why? At the same time, in their own countries, They see that the United States backs, supports, funds, underwrites, and provides massive weaponry to dictatorial regimes that keep the people constantly oppressed and suppressed. No political rights, no human rights, no artistic rights, no rights of literary rights, nothing. Nothing. Just beat them into the sand, right? And this boils and boils and bubbles under the surface. And you have like the Saudi royal family, a member of which is one of the is the biggest investor outside of the Rupert Murdoch family in the Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization in this country. You have the Saudi royal family that as soon as they get into a problem with Iraq, as they did back in the early 90s, the Saudi royals all run like a bunch of scared goddamn desert Gila monsters. They run, "Oh, America, come and support us. Come and defend us, please. Ooh, ooh, ooh." Remember that? The Kuwaiti royal family, as soon as Iraq says, "Hey, wait a minute, you guys are slant drilling. You're taking our oil. And what the hell is a Kuwait anyway? That's one of the provinces of Iraq." "No, no, Saddam." So what happens? In comes the United States with its mighty, massive military and beats the crap out of everybody. "Sit down, shut up, listen to your dictator. Oh, and don't mess with the Israelis." And people in this country wonder why, wonder why they hate our guts. I mean, my God, what would you do? Truth seeker. Anyway, I digress. The Middle East is ready to explode. What was that song? And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend. Oh, Eve of Destruction. There was a line in that, and that came out when? 40 years ago? Barry Sadler? Eve of Destruction. Was it Barry Sadler? I think he was a singer. Oh, my God. You talk about a different lifetime. Anyway, keep your eyes open and your ears open and watch what happens in the Middle East and how it's going to be spun by American media, a corporate gangster capitalist media in this country. But the truth is, very simply, and if you understand your history of the Middle East, you know this. You don't have to get it from me. What the hell am I? I run a 25-cent radio program. The truth of the Middle East, where it concerns the Arabic speakers, is they have been suppressed and oppressed and dominated and dictatored ever since the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, I guess, since the end of World War I. So, whatever. Perry, too, had a comment here about the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission we were talking about a minute ago. Subject line says, "The jury is not going quietly to the gallows." Prairie 2 writes, "The Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission report is in, and a majority of six concluded that," and this is from the report, "the crisis was avoidable, the result of human actions, inactions, and misjudgments. Warnings were ignored. Quote, the greatest tragedy would be to accept the refrain that no one could have seen this coming, and thus nothing could have been done. If we accept this notion, it will happen again, end quote. That's from the commission report. They listed a litany of bad policies and inaction, or wrong and sometimes illegal actions of the Bush administration, failures or wrong-headed policies of the Federal Reserve and Alan Greenspan and Timothy Geithner, then the head of the New York Fed, and their successors, Wall Street bankers and credit rating bureaus, as well as other bad players. You know all the people you've heard me rant about. No real surprise in the report, but they do claim to have previously unseen proof that will go to prosecutors for review. Let me digress. I heard a report today that there is some indication that the criminal activity that was discovered in the course of doing this report, the criminal activity is going to be referred to, oh, I don't know, if it's referred to Obama's Justice Department, forget about it. Eric Holder's not going to do anything. If it's referred to the various state attorneys general, maybe something will happen, maybe not. Anyway, Prairie 2 goes on, the minority of the commission, four Republicans, concluded that the majority report was simplistic and ignored the global aspects of the crisis, and they blamed it on the housing bubble. That's code for brown people. In fact, the report didn't ignore the global aspects of the crisis. Rather, it rightfully blamed the Bush administration, the Fed, and Wall Street. Also, the ratings agencies that told foreign investors that the securitized crap Wall Street was selling were AAA-rated investments, you know, just like treasury bonds or gold. Woohoo! The media are gearing up to call this report a hung jury. Say what? The facts are in the report. It doesn't matter if four of the 10 so-called jurors are made men in the crime family that's on trial, the four Republicans. Today's weekly jobless claims report, by the way, jumped to 453,000 for last week. The corporate media has blamed this on the bad weather, even though economists had predicted only 400,000 new claims. I guess economists don't watch the Weather Channel. They don't seem to actually watch the economy either. PrairieNumeral2.com. Oh, my goodness. After 9 years, the Department of Homeland Security is retiring the nation's candy cane color-coded terror threat alert in favor of a new public warning system. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano will announce details of the new system. Well, she did today. The old procedures will be phased out beginning next week, and changes will be fully implemented by the end of April. Oh, my goodness, that means from the end of January to the end of April. Eek! Who's going to warn us? There's no candy-colored tangerine flag, baby, and there's no new one? What the hell? Oh, my God. A task force appointed by Napolitano in 2009... to review the effectiveness of the rainbow hued alert levels, concluded they should be scrapped. It took them 2 years to come up with that. Oh, my God. The panel wrote in a report, quote, task force membership believes the color code system has suffered from a lack of credibility and clarity, leading to an erosion of public confidence such that it should be abandoned, end quote. Let me ask you something real quick. Truth Seeker, what was the threat level today and yesterday? Come on, quick, quick, quick. Huh? Huh? Yellow! It's been yellow for how long? CNN is reporting the new methodology for alerts called the National Terror Advisory System will focus on specific threats in geographical areas. Oh, goody. We'll be right back.
But not for voting. You don't believe in war. But what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
10 before the hour, Seth. Is it Seth? Seth has sent me an email here. Huffington Post, The Arabist, CNN reporter Ben Wiedemann. I was just talking about him. LA Times, Reuters, AP are all reporting now that just about every form of communication outside of Egypt that would take communications out of the country has been turned off. No internet, no DSL, no USB. The news of the internet outage came minutes after the AP published a video of an Egyptian protester being shot. CNN reporter Ben Wiedemann confirmed internet is down in Cairo, and writes, no internet, no SMS. What is next? Mobile phones and landlines? So much for stability. LA Times is also reporting that BlackBerry Internet has been taken offline in Egypt. Reuters confirms major network disruptions for Egypt Internet users at this time, with reports in Cairo that there is no Internet at all. A top state official in Egypt declined to comment. And then an update, the AP, Associated Press, also confirms widespread Internet outages in Egypt. Italy-based Seabone, a major Internet service provider for Egypt, reported early Friday, now, there was no Internet traffic going into or out of the country. The French news agency reports that cell phone text messaging also appears to be down in Egypt. And independent citizens media organization Global Voices just posted a report on Egypt's Internet black hole, is what they're calling it, and notes it will attempt to file future reports from Egypt via phone calls and other communications methods. Thanks to Seth for the update. So, you know, it's one thing or another. I mean, it's an either or situation here that is going on in that country right now. Egypt has been on the verge of explosion for a long time, but keep in mind, Egypt controls the Suez Canal. Egypt is the only Arab country that has any sort of an agreement with Israel. The Muslim Brotherhood has been pretty powerful when you live in a dictatorship, no opposition is very powerful. But this organization called the Muslim Brotherhood has been allowed to, I guess as a way of releasing some of the pressure brought on by Mubarak's dictatorship, the Muslim Brotherhood has been allowed to protest a little bit here, a little bit there. But with this explosion, I would expect... I don't know what to expect. There are some pictures now on MSNBC that I don't know if they're live. CNN would probably be the network to go to see if there's anything that is coming from Egypt. And CNN, of course, is doing commercials, so never mind. I don't know. I you never know what it is that is going to trigger a bloody meltdown around the planet. Do you remember that movie? What was the movie, Kathy, about the computer that was running games? No, not Matrix. It was years ago. What was the name of that movie? War Games. War Games. Thanks, Denver. War Games. And remember, in War Games, there was all sorts of possible causes of thermonuclear war. There was the Middle East option. There was the Afghanistan option. There was the Manchurian option. There was the Brazilian option. All these different games that had been set up by the Pentagon to plan a response if the literal end of the world started, a global thermonuclear war started in one of these various regions. And when I'm watching this today, I'm watching some of the news reports today, some of the video footage, not on television, but online. There's some real good websites that are putting videos out there, or there were. And I'm thinking about that movie, War Games. And just how deadly serious this could be. You know, people talk about 1.5 billion Muslims on the planet. And when you stop and think how many of them are forced to live in a 14th century religious environment, you got to wonder at what point those people will say enough. Maybe it started tonight. Oh my God! On CNN, they have, is that the Kardashians? Piers Morgan has the Kardashians on, showing their breasts and their long hair. Oh my God! Unbelievable! CNN, right? Ted Turner is probably home right now pouring himself a glass of poison. The Kardashians? No, I don't think they're Egyptian. I think, if anything, they must be Iranian. Why am I talking about this? We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour, and this hour also is sponsored by Bill in Providence, Rhode Island, whose message is, "Our day will come, truth seekers." Okay, that's, it may be here now. where to go? See, I get hooked on this stuff that's live, that's going on. And about the only way you can see what's really happening is to go to Al Jazeera television. And there's some other American online networks you can check out, too. But there is there are some very, very destabilizing, I'm losing my train of thought here, some very destabilizing events that are occurring in the Middle East even as we speak, all over that part of the world, and it's going to have a profound effect on us. Let me digress. You've heard of Eric Erickson. He's the new little slime ball on CNN. He gets to be a permanent guest on what's the guy's program on CNN? No, not Ali Velji. Somebody help me out here. He does. He used to do a Sunday morning interview program. No, not David Gregory. I can't get any help here. A guy on, not Anderson Cooper, not Wolf Blitzer. John King. You did say King. Thank you, Denver. John King. One of the permanent guests on John King's program is this Eric Erickson. He is the editor-in-chief and the dear leader of the blog RedState.com, I think. And CNN, don't forget, CNN launched the television career of the murderous Glenn Beck. And now they have this crazy bastard, Eric Erickson. This is his blog from redstate.com. Quote, here at Red State, we too have drawn a line. We will not endorse any candidate who will not reject the judicial usurpation of Roe v. Wade and affirm that the unborn are no less entitled to a right to live simply because of their size or their physical location. Those who wish to write on the front page of Red State must make the same pledge. The reason for this is simple. Once before, our nation was forced to repudiate the Supreme Court with mass bloodshed. We remain steadfast in our belief that this will not be necessary again, but only if those committed to justice do not waver or compromise and send a clear and unmistakable signal to their elected officials of what must be necessary to earn our support. What they're talking about is a complete ban on any sort of abortion. Now, the construct in that sentence, we remain steadfast in our belief that this will not be necessary again, mass bloodshed, but only if. Now, the only if construct means that, according to Eric Erickson's Red State, mass bloodshed will be necessary if elected officials don't overturn Roe v. Wade. Again, Red State doesn't say mass bloodshed may occur if elected officials don't do what is necessary to earn our support. It says such bloodshed will be necessary. That's what they say. Nicole Bell at Crooks and Liars laid this out today. CNN? This is on CNN. This sick son of a bitch, Eric Erickson, who is now threatening the entire country. Good God. Among all of these right-wing murderers, and once it threatened death and destruction on CNN, on the Rupert Murdoch Terrorist Network, do they have any on MSNBC yet? They're all on radio, coast to coast, hour to hour, border to border, constant stream of this. Man, does this ever stop? I don't know. 1,000 in Yemen protest against the government. The young people in Egypt are driving the revolt against Mubarak. New York Times calls it a revolt against Mubarak now. I think it's more than a revolt. I think it is a flat-out revolution. I don't think the Egyptians are going to stop until they overthrow Mubarak or until he leaves. And I think that's one of the reasons the Egyptian government has cut off. This is what the Chinese did back in 1989, right? During the Tiananmen Square massacre. And immediately after that was over, that was a signal. That Tiananmen Square massacre was a signal to the global capitalists, especially in this country, that China was ready to do business. And the global gangster capitalists, especially the ones in this country, once they saw that the Chinese People's Liberation Army would shoot down in cold blood their own citizens, then the global capitalists said, hey, that's cool. We like that. That's great. We're heading for China. First thing we got to do is get this NAFTA bullcrap passed. Let's get Clinton to do that. Pappy Bush has got it started. We'll get Clinton to finish it up. And we'll talk about, that's the North America Free Trade Agreement. Once we get that done and spend a little time in Mexico and build up some maquiladoras there that turn out to be nothing but open-air whorehouses eventually and gangster havens, then we'll move to China. Because the Chinese have made it clear. They will shoot their own goddamn people down in the street if they even talk about democracy. So here we are in Egypt, Tunisia, Yemen. Dateline Beirut, Yemen, one of the Middle East's most impoverished countries and a haven for al-Qaeda militants, became the latest Arab state to witness mass protests on Thursday as thousands of Yemenis took to the street in the capital and other regions to demand a change in government. In Sana'a, the capital, 10,000 protesters led by opposition members and youth activists gathered at Sana'a University, and about 6,000 more gathered elsewhere. Participants, lawmakers, and activists reached by telephone said many carried pink banners and wore pink headbands. The color was both a unifying symbol and an indication of the level of planning underlying the protests. One of the reasons that Egypt has been such a dear friend of the United States is because we knew that as long as Mubarak was in power, Egypt would be a good little brown state where we could send our suspects to be tortured and I'm just tired of it, aren't you? Let's take a break. Let's just take a break. Jesus, play some music, Kathy. Let's take a break. I think when we come back, I'm going to talk about 13 and a half billion years ago. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
We have temporarily lost our Ustream feed because I had to log off. I went to Al Jazeera English and everything froze, so I had to break every single internet connection, including Ustream. Sorry about that, folks. What I was going to mention here. Oh, and by the way, this hour is sponsored by Bill in Providence, Rhode Island, whose message is "Our day will come, truth seekers." Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. 11.5 billion years ago, some light escaped from a tiny little, relatively speaking, galaxy. And it's been heading our way ever since. 13.2 billion years ago, the refurbished Hubble Space Telescope has detected what may be the most distant, earliest galaxy yet found. This kind of stuff is just fascinating to me. It's been traveling, the light that was picked up by Hubble has been traveling toward us, so to speak. don't take any of this literally. At the speed of light, or faster, who knows, 186,000 miles per second for the past 13.2 billion years. And Hubble finally picked it up, right? Now, if this is confirmed, the scientists have to take a look at this. If it's confirmed, the discovery takes astronomers deep into an era when stars and galaxies were first lighting up the universe and burning their way out of a primordial fog known as the Dark Ages. This is when stars and galaxies were being born. And when I read this today in the New York Times, It's very fascinating. They had a picture. In the middle of the picture, they highlighted. Matter of fact, you could go to nytimes.com, and it's online there. But if you take a look at this stuff, you take a look at the photos that are coming in from Hubble, and of course they're impossible to comprehend. You and I, I think astrophysicists have a hard time, but you and I, it's hopeless. We can look at these pictures and marvel and kind of get the idea of, wow, that is really important. But to comprehend it, of course, we can't do that. But when I looked at the stuff online today and looked at some of these photographs, I couldn't help but think, well, when somebody who believes that the universe is 6,000 years old, that would be Christians, Muslims, and Jews, when they look at these photos, what do they think they're looking at? Do they think it's just a hoax? Do they think that all the astronomers and scientists on Earth have gotten together, even the Christian, Jewish, and Muslim ones, have gotten together to destroy their very own religions? I mean, what does an evangelical Christian or an Orthodox Jew or a fundamentalist Islamist, what do they think of when they see these pictures? I mean, what passes through their very encapsulated, closed-off minds? They know that the universe is not, that it's impossible for something to be 13.2 billion years old. They know that's impossible because it says so in their holy books. It's impossible. And to believe otherwise means that, well, at various times it means you would be murdered. You would be burned alive, or you would be decapitated, or you would be tortured. And in some of these societies, that can still happen. And I think about that sometimes. Don't you? You think about, we have literally, and I don't think I'm overstating this, we literally have hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people on this planet who, when confronted with scientific information, whether it's about global climate change or about the age of the universe, or mutating species, evolution going on right in front of their eyes, whether it is on a micro or even a macro level, what do they do? They reject it all, I guess, and say, no, that's not true. They would rather live in their demon-haunted world, and I think that's the reason that I know that's the reason there is so much bloodshed and fear and anxiety going on right now all over the place, because people just refuse. The religionists, who still hold mighty control over so many hundreds of millions, billions of people, the religionists say, no, none of that's true. The earth was formed about 6,000 years ago by some great big cloud being who just thought it, and it became. And we wonder why we have the kinds of problems on this poor little blue dot that we have. We'll be back.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes.
Before the hour, Another story that popped up today is about the BBC. We talked about this some time ago. One of the reasons that the Murdoch terrorist broadcast organization in the UK worked so hard to get a right-wing regime elected in that country is because the BBC provides broadcast services that the Rupert Murdoch terrorist network lusts after and wants to have and will have. Eventually. Well, the eventually is here. BBC World Service said that it is going to close 5 of its 32 language services and reduce its workforce by about a quarter, cutting around 650 jobs over the next 3 years because it is facing a 16% reduction in its budget. Now, the BBC began in 1932. It's one of Britain's most visible exports and is known for bringing uncensored news to places where there is no free press. Currently has a budget of about $500 million a year, a staff of 2,400, and a listening and viewing audience of 180 million a week across television, radio, and the internet. But, ta-da, the BBC is facing deep cuts in spending over the next several years, and this week announced that it would cut 25% from its online budget. But I hasten to point out that it was the government which is responsible for financing the World Service through the Foreign Office that made the decision to cut the budget so sharply in this case. Peter Horrocks, the BBC's global news director, told reporters, quote, I want to stress that these are cuts that we would not have chosen to make without the funding reduction by the government. We made our case as strongly as we possibly could, end quote. In the House of Commons, angry legislators, some from the governing Conservative Party, lined up to denounce the plans. One, Andrew Tyrie, a Conservative member of Parliament, said, quote, there is very deep concern in the House about this decision, end quote. And so on and so on and so on. So it's not just in this country, but it is happening. Oberman has been taken off. It's my understanding that our program is going to be truncated, if not removed, from several stations over the next couple, 3 months. And as far as the BBC, we talked about this months ago. Do you remember? Do you remember the conversation that Murdoch is a strong presence in the UK to begin with, his television service. But the BBC always frustrated him because, you know, it's a communist organization, right? It's funded by the British government. That makes it, if not communist, certainly makes it socialist. And Rupert just didn't like that. So, doing everything he could to use his power to make sure that a conservative government was elected, with the idea being that once the conservatives were elected, and once the financial crisis were examined by the conservatives, well, it'd be very obvious. In this country, we cut funding, Medicaid funding to the various states for dental programs and hearing programs and children's health care programs. That's what we cut here, because we are insane in this country. But in the UK, since they have a fairly strong social services network where it concerns medical problems, where to cut? Well, go for the BBC. Go for the BBC. And of course, Murdoch, this huge bastard troll sitting back in the shadows someplace up on his perch, watches all this. He watches the pigs on his American terrorist network leading people to commit acts of terror in their own country. And he rubs his bony hands together and laughs his ass off. He watches in the UK while the government that he helped elect begins the process of completely defunding the BBC so that Murdoch and his terrorist organization can take over. He wants everything. He's like any predatory gangster capitalist. He doesn't want 70% of everything, or 90%, or 99.9%. Hideous bastards like this want everything, and they will have it. They will have it. Somebody sent this to me. Oh, Matt in Michigan sent this in. This is from this date in 1975. This is so cute. I love this. January 27, 1975. Senate investigation of FBI and CIA activities begins. A bipartisan Senate investigation of activities by the FBI and the Central Intelligence Agency is launched by a special congressional committee headed by Senator Frank Church of Idaho. On November 20th, the commission released its report charging both U.S. government agencies with illegal activities. The committee reported that the FBI and the CIA had conducted illegal surveillance of several hundred thousand U.S. citizens. The CIA was also charged with illegally plotting to assassinate foreign leaders such as Salvador Allende, the democratically elected socialist president of Chile. In 1973, Allende was killed in a coup that the CIA secretly helped organize. The Senate committee also reported that the CIA had maintained a secret stockpile of poisons despite a specific presidential order to destroy the substances. I did read somewhere today that Chile is thinking of opening a real investigation into the murder of Salvador Allende all those years ago. Hopefully, this ghoulish Henry Kissinger will continue to suck oxygen and his filthy, rotten heart will continue to pump blood long enough that an inquiry or a panel or a judicial review board in Chile will find that Henry Kissinger was the brains, so to speak, behind the murder of Salvador Allende and the establishment of a dictatorship under General Augusto Pinochet that lasted how many years and how many people were disappeared and how many people died. Wouldn't that be wonderful? What else we have? Oh, yeah, from the San Francisco Chronicle. There is a candidate for mayor out there. He's a state senator. His name is Leland Yee. And Limbaugh has been going after him. You know how Beck orders people murdered, shot in the head? How O'Reilly orders physicians to be executed? And then it comes to pass. Rush Limbaugh has gone after state senator and mayoral candidate in San Francisco, Leland Yee. And he now says he's getting racist death threats to his San Francisco and Sacramento offices. They appear to be linked to his recent criticism of right-wing commentator Rush Limbaugh. And, of course, Limbaugh lets his slime know that it's time to strike back. The anonymous faxes, it says here in the Chronicle, laced with racial epithets and misspellings, of course, were addressed to, it's in the Chronicle online, but I can't say it. The faxes include a drawing of a U.S. flag-adorned pickup truck towing a noose that is looped around what appears to be a caricature head of President Barack Obama. The fact says, quote, without exception, Marxists are enemies of the United States Constitution. Death to all Marxists, foreign and domestic. It also says, Achtung, Fishhead, Leland Lee, Rush Limbaugh will kick your blank, 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 and expose you for the fool you are. End quote. Last week, Yee called on Limbaugh to apologize for mocking the Chinese language after Limbaugh used gibberish to mimic a speech by Chinese President Hu Jintao at the White House. Yee's office said the fax threats are similar to messages Yee received in April after he pushed for the disclosure of Sarah Palin's speaking fee at Cal State University at Stanislaus. The Pima County Sheriff's Office in Arizona recently contacted Yee regarding the April faxes and a possible connection to faxes found during the investigation surrounding the shooting of Representative Gabriel Giffords. Yee said in a statement, quote, it is quite disturbing that such a racist sentiment still exists in our country. As I've said in the past, it is unfortunate acts like these that demonstrate why we must continue to be vigilant against hate and intolerance. Such vitriol has no place within our political discourse or anywhere in our society, end quote. That's a nice statement, Mr. Yee, but it's kind of nonsensical. there is no vigilance in this country against hate and intolerance. As a matter of fact, it is promulgated and promoted and blasted all over the country every single day by Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and a whole list of second-tier and third-tier and fourth-tier right-wing punks who infest every single corner of the broadcast spectrum in this country, radio and television. So I don't know what to say, Mr. Yee, except you're just the latest. I would say make sure that you protect yourself. We'll be right back.
Nice guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Next hour is this story that just drove me crazy when I read about it yesterday. So stick around for that. Oh my God. This hour has been, has been sponsored by Bill in Providence, Rhode Island, whose message is "Our day will come, truth seekers." Thanks, Bill. And Reg over at TVNewsLies.org. If you don't go to that website, shame on you. You should go there. Yeah, especially if you want a complete synopsis, or not synopsis, but a complete index of stories that have occurred during any given day. There are a lot of sites that I recommend, but two of them very much so, TVNewsLies.org and also BartCop.com. A lot of you are familiar with BartCop. That's where I get a lot of my material. I just steal it from him. You know, you can sue me if he wants to. But TVNewsLies.org, go there. So Reg sent this to me from that site. Afghan officials want to prolong detentions. And what this is about, this is where we set an example. And, you know, the Arabic-speaking world is exploding even as we speak, and the damage and murder and mayhem that we've done in Afghanistan and Pakistan is guaranteeing that there's going to be a second front over there. But get this, Afghan justice and security officials want to adopt the U.S. practice of detaining suspected insurgents indefinitely without trial. Now, what are we taking? What were we supposed to be taking to Afghanistan? Democracy and the rule of law and proper government. You know, we want to destroy a tribal society that's been in basically the same self-governing pattern for the past three millennia. And we want to replace it with democracy. Isn't that the hype, the story? Isn't that what the reason we send men and women over there to kill and be killed and get their brains blown away and their arms blown off, right? The Afghans embrace, New York Times, or no, this is Washington Post, who is this? I don't know who it is, it really doesn't matter, to hell with it. The Afghans embrace of prolonged detention could provoke an angry reaction from human rights advocates who say that low-level insurgents, and sympathizers, and probably a lot of cab drivers and goat herders and opium growers, have been swept into an opaque system. This guy's a good writer, Rajiv Chandra Ekaran. I'm sorry, into an opaque system that allows only limited opportunities for adjudication and redress. Is that a hell of a sentence to find in a newspaper or what? Ah, woo! What he's trying to say is, our example in this country of indefinite detention, no reading of charges against you. In other words, no crappy ass little Bill of Rights here. It's not applied here. Why should it be applied in a country that has never had a Bill of Rights to begin with? Huh? An Afghan-run system of detention without trial has yet to be approved by President Hamid Karzai, who has complained repeatedly about the U.S. policy of holding his citizens for years without legal review. But senior officials of his government have voiced support for the move to achieve what they regard as an even more important goal, taking charge of detentions from the U.S.-led NATO coalition, right? So here's the deal, apparently, that General Petraeus is offering. We are going to turn over to you the detention system that we've set up in your country. All of our torture camps, all of our black hole prisons, all of our Bagram Air Base, murder holes. We're going to turn it all over to you. But we're nervous about turning it over to you, Hamid, whatever the hell your name is. We're nervous because invariably you let these people go. Just because there is no proof, there's no reason to hold them, you let them go. What kind of nonsense is this? We've shown you how to do it. You hold them for goddamn ever. You send them to Egypt to be tortured. You send them to Syria to have their fingernails torn off. You send them to Cambodia to have their testicles crushed. But you don't release them. So we're a little bit nervous about turning everything over to you, Hamid. Well, the Karzai government, which is not Hamid. Hamid has to stand there and say, but the government, the ministers in his government are saying, that's all we have to do? Is just to get these goddamn Americans out of our country, all we have to do is to do what they're doing? Sweep people up. Don't charge them with anything, but just say, you're a terrorist, you're a terrorist, you're a terrorist, you're a surgeon, you're a terrorist, you're a terrorist. Now, lock them up and keep them forever. That's all we have to do? Hey, woo, piece of cake. This is what we're doing. U.S. and Afghan officials say the legal basis for continuing the detentions derives from additional Protocol 2 to the Geneva Conventions. In 2009, Afghanistan ratified the protocol, which allows a country to detain without trial people involved in an armed conflict within its borders, provided the various standards of review and humane treatment are met. God have mercy. They just want to be like us. That's all. They just want some of our American-style democracy. That's all. Preventive detention, indeterminate detention, arrest, thrown in prison without charge. Stick around. The third hour is a killer. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. Still, you never know. Maybe Molloy Broadcasting will get a new owner like Comcast, and I'll have to resign. Last night I was talking about a story that I had come across. Carol Lee at Daily Kos wrote about it, as did Lisa Flam at AOL News, and several other places on the net. Let me preface the story by saying, when my now 32-year-old son, Chris, was six, I had had him in a private school for like 2 years. I was single parent at the time, and Chris and I were living by ourselves in Midtown Atlanta. And there was a nearby private school, very progressive, very interesting, and not too expensive. I think the tuition was probably about $700 a month. And so I sent Chris there for a couple of years. This is back in the day when I guess I was working for CNN at the time. And school was fine, but after 2 years in this private school, I decided that the progressive, small p, I'm not talking about political, I'm talking about the style of teaching that they were using, that their system was just not what I felt was giving Chris the kind of basic education that that I got, that you probably got. You know, the old reading, writing, and arithmetic thing, right? Rote memory and so much stuff. A lot of people make fun of rote memory in education, but some of it is absolutely necessary to put those multiplication tables into a kid's head so they're there forever. Put lists of adverbs in a kid's head so they're there forever. You know, that sort of thing. So anyway, I decided to switch Chris into a public school. The public school that was in our area was just not one that I wanted to send him to. Their academic record was crappy. There were episodes of, if not violence, too many fights among little kids. The school system at the time, the Atlanta Public School System, was in the ditch. It's in the ditch again. But so anyway, I made a decision to send him to a nearby school in whose district we didn't live. And the way I did that, his mother, even though Chris was living with me, I had custody of him, yada, 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 his mother lived in the school district. So we very simply listed his mother's address. Chris didn't live with his mother. Chris lived with me. And it was about a four-mile trek to get him to school every morning. All right. Chris went to, I think he started his second grade at the public school. And when he was in the third grade, after he'd been there for about a year and a half, the principal called me in one day, real nice woman, and she said, listen, we know what you're doing about sending Chris here. You don't live in the district. And even though Chris's mother lives in the district, we just can't continue like this. If you want to continue to send Chris here, you're going to have to pay tuition. And I said, oh, okay, how much is the tuition? She says, $200 a month. I said, okay, I'll pay the $200 a month. Well, to make a long story short, Chris finished up. That school only went through the fifth grade, and then he went on to middle school in the same district, and so on and so forth. Now, at no time when this was going on, did anyone approach me about, you know, you're breaking the law. The principal said to me, you can't continue to send Chris here because you don't live in the district. If you want to send him here, it's going to cost you $200 a month for public school tuition. And a friend of mine said, well, when you got busted, didn't you feel kind of guilty? I said, no. Guilty about what? What are you talking about? I mean, I live right next to the district that he that contained the school in which I decided to send him. No, I don't feel what? You know, I pay my taxes. The taxes go to the county. This is all the same county, yada, yada. Yeah, but you know, you were cheating, Molloy. I said, oh, bite me. So the story ended. And Chris went on, and the story stops there. I mean, it's just a brick wall. Until I read the other day this report by Carol Lee at Daily Kos, and by a writer at AOL and a couple other places. There's a woman in Ohio, a single mom, living in the projects, who is going to school herself to earn a teaching credential in order to make a better living for herself and her kids, two children, 12 and 16. She decided to enroll her children in the district where her father lived. Now, it's a single mom. You know, as soon as anytime I see single parent, it reminds me back in the day when Chris and I were going through the whole single parenthood thing. Now, you know, not to imply that there's anything wrong with his mother. It's just that we decided, his mother and I decided, that Chris would be better served as a little boy being raised with me. He had access to his mom many times, and she spent a lot of time with him. So, you know, there's no big intrigue here in my case. It was just that's the way we had decided to do it. So this woman that I'm referring to, she decided, well, you know, my dad, the kid's grandfather, lives in the district, so I'll list his address so that I can get my kids in a school that has good test scores. The school district has a terrific rating. And I'm trying to get out of the projects. This woman obviously was saying to herself, I need to get out of the projects. She herself was in school getting a teaching certificate. Well, you know what happened. As reported in the local media in Ohio, Kelly Williams Bowler, that's her name, is a single mother with two girls aged 12 and 16, and is only a few credit hours short of graduating from the University of Akron with a teaching degree. This is in Akron, Ohio. She was working as a teaching assistant with special needs children at Bucktel High School. She was also caring for her ailing father, who has been charged with multiple felonies, her father, her sick father, in this case. Miss Williams Bowler was convicted of the two felony counts last Saturday night after 7 hours of jury deliberations. On Tuesday, the judge sentenced her to 5 years in prison, but suspended all but 10 days in the county jail, saying that to not include time behind bars would, quote, demean the seriousness, end quote, of the offense. She was also given 2 years of probation and 80 hours of community service. What did she do? She did essentially the same thing that I did. She decided that she wanted to get her children into a school district where they could get an education. So she used her father's address. I decided I wanted to get my son into a school district that had a better reputation, so I used his mother's address. Same thing. In addition, this woman, Kelly Williams Bowler, her father was charged with grand theft for allowing the woman to use his address when the girls didn't live there. Prosecutors in this case claim it cost the school district $30,500 for the girls' education at their school with no tax base supporting their attendance. Now, that leads you to believe, doesn't it, why there was no offsetting charge for what their education would have cost in their home district. If it cost 30 grand to go to the school district right next door, what did it cost in the district where the kids lived? Aha! Either it should have been a wash, or else there is some, shall we say, inequality in the two districts. More when we come back.
So, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know.
We'll
to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So, in Ohio, single mom, two kids, 12 and 16. Her name is Kelly Williams Bowler. She has now been convicted of two felonies for registering her kids in a different district, and her sick father, the girl's grandfather, the children's grandfather, has been charged with grand theft. The prosecutor said that sending the children to a different district costs the district to which this woman sent her kids $30,000, which makes you wonder why it wasn't a wash for the county system. If it costs $30,000 to send two kids to a school in District A and District B is right next door, what's the difference in the price? Unless, of course, there is some horrific inequity between the two districts. Now, at first, the judge was the target of everybody was blaming the judge for what is clearly, as Carol Lee at Daily Coast points out, clearly an outrageous miscarriage of justice. But if you read further, it seems to be the fault of the prosecutor. The investigating officers, and perhaps most especially the superintendent of schools for this Copley Fairlawn district in Akron, Ohio. According to reports, the judge said the county's prosecutor's office refused to consider reducing the charges against the mom to misdemeanors, and that all closed-door talks to resolve the case outside of court met with failure. The mom, 40 years old, was sentenced Tuesday to 10 days in jail after a jury convicted her of two felony counts of tampering with records. The judge said numerous pretrial hearings were held since last summer. The judge said, quote, the state would not move, would not budge, and offer Miss Williams Bowler to plead to a misdemeanor, end quote. Now, it gets creepier when you see how far they went to investigate and prosecute this mom. From the local ABC news station, Newsnet 5 in Akron, this is how they reported it. Prosecutors said Miss Williams Bowler lived in Akron, but falsified enrollment papers in the Copley Fairlawn School District so her two girls could attend for 2 years. Prosecutors said the lies cost the district about $30,000. Copley Fairlawn does not have open enrollment, and out-of-district tuition is about $800 a month. The school district spent about $6,000 to bring the case to trial. That includes hiring a private investigator who followed Miss Williams Bowler and her children around while secretly videotaping their movements. Superintendent Brain Poe said Copley Fairlawn has lost hundreds of thousands of dollars because of parents illegally enrolling their children into his schools. Now, the article at the television station's website goes on to say that this is the very first time anyone has ever been brought up on felony charges for sending their kids out of district. And as Carol Lee asked, do you think it's coincidence that they brought these charges against a black woman sending her black children to a white, affluent, successful school? Were they afraid these two kids would bring down the property values or the test scores or both? Carol Lee writes, this makes me shaky angry. This is what I mentioned last night when I told you a little bit about the story. I get the same feeling, the kind of angry where you want to walk out on your front porch and scream. The kind of angry that if you think about this, you can't go to sleep at night. You lay there in bed and you just go, oh my God, what? Every child in this country should have the right to a good education, but they don't. And when a parent takes desperate steps, Carol Lee writes, to ensure that they have a good education while caring for an ailing parent and going to school herself, a jail sentence is not the answer. Ever. Think about this. You shouldn't ever go to jail for sending your kids to school. I don't give a goddamn what school it is. That's all. But as Carol Lee writes, as angry as I am, it doesn't even come near what anger must feel like within the black community about this. And when we come back after this break, I'll share with you what Elon James White, black man, writing for Salon, what he has to say about it. Are you following this? I'm sure there are some Ayn Rand people who appreciate the fact that she was a goddamn speed freak junkie and a smoker and died of lung cancer and took Medicare and Social Security while she exhorted all of her brain-dead readers, don't ever do that! I'm sure there are some Ayn Rand followers out there who are sitting on their large, padded, well-padded, probably white asses right now thinking, well, Mike, if you break the law, you know, you gotta be a law-abiding citizen like me. Ha, ha, ha.
The Batman in front of me is calling black people trash to his children. When he's the only trash here I see. And I'm thinking this man wears a white hood in the night when his children should sleep. But they'll slip to their windows and they'll see how, and they'll think that white hood's all they need. Cause it's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life, it's a hard life wherever you go.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Okay, so a mom with two girls, ages 12 and 16. The mom is Kelly Williams Bowler in the Akron, Ohio area, sends her children out of district, out of school district, so the kids will get a decent education. Mom is in trying to get her teaching certificate from University of Akron. The address she uses to send her kids to a better school district is that of her sick and ailing father. The prosecutors hire people to track this woman and her children with video cameras. They finally bust her. She is sentenced to, 10 years in prison, or 5 years in prison for her crime, all of which is suspended except 10 days in jail and 80 hours of community service. I'm quoting from Carol Lee's diary at Daily Kos, and also from AOL, and now from Elon James White, writing for Salon. And this gives a perspective from the black community. Elon James White says, to judge this simply as a case of fraud regarding the mom is to ignore the surrounding circumstances. Some say that legally speaking, circumstances, quote, quote, don't matter. But if you murder someone, they specifically have to figure out if it was a crime of passion. Was it self-defense? Was it premeditated? Each crime receives wildly different sentences. The bottom line is that a person is dead, but somehow that's not black and white. They say Miss Williams Bowler was judged by a jury of her peers. Was she really? Was it a group of poor minorities trying to finally have a chance at the supposed American dream? Were these peers people whose families have tried for generations to rise from the injustice and inequalities that they literally had nothing to do with? Show me these peers. I'm not saying Kelly Williams Bowler was right. I'm not saying she shouldn't have to pay what she owes to the local government. I'm saying to make an example of a poor mother with a family on her first offense is unconscionable. To think this reasonable is to ignore the reality that we live in and the shades of right and wrong that appear in so many offenses. By the way, America stole a lot of labor from my people, Elon James White writes. Are we going to get any of that? owed money anytime soon? No? Didn't think so. And Dr. Boyce Watkins writes, I'm not sure why the court is treating this law-abiding mom like a thug who ran into a building with a shotgun and robbed the district of 30 grand. Instead, they could simply subtract the amount it costs for her kids to go to the second school from the amount that would be spent for them to attend the first school. I'm sure the difference would still be substantial, since American educational apartheid dictates that schools in poor neighborhoods are blatantly, significantly less quality than other schools. The racial division within American schools are nothing less than a blatant and consistent human rights violation and should certainly be treated as such. Dr. Watkins goes on, this case is a textbook example of everything that remains racially wrong with America's educated, economic, and criminal justice systems. Let's start from the top. Had Mrs. Williams Bowler been white, she likely would never have been prosecuted for this crime in the first place. In fact, Dr. Watkins writes, parenthetically, I'd love for them to show me a white woman in that area who's gone to jail for the same crime. She also is statistically not as likely to be living in a housing project with the need, the white woman, with the need to break an unjust law in order to create a better life for her daughters. Being black is also correlated with the fact that Miss Williams Bowler likely didn't have the resources to hire the kinds of attorneys who could get her out of this mess, since the average black family's wealth is roughly one-tenth that of white families. And finally, economic inequality is impactful here, in this case, because that's the reason that Miss Williams Bowler's school district likely has fewer resources than the schools she chose for her kids. In other words, black people have been historically robbed of our economic opportunities, leading to a two-tiered reality that we are then imprisoned for attempting to alleviate. That, my friends, is American Racism 101, end quote. And Carolee adds, you bet it is. If ever there were a case where a presidential pardon would be in order, this is one. I'm still creeped out about this school district hiring private detectives and videotaping the movements of two girls and their mother. It takes a sick kind of racist jerk to authorize that for school attendance. Ah, but you see, it was a black mom. And just to add insult to injury, prosecutors had the option of retrying this woman's father and the mom for the grand theft charges. What a great way to hold an anvil over their heads. Carolee writes, I keep trying to reach for the right set of words to express just how ugly this situation is, but they're not there. It's a situation that exceeds my vocabulary. It's despicable. The school attendance police, the 21st century equivalent of the KKK. So, Mom told ABC News, according to AOL, quote, it's overwhelming. I'm exhausted. I did this for my daughters, so there it is. I did this for them, end quote. She said her father lives in the Copley Fairlawn district, the mom sent her kids to go to school and for which she has now been busted in charge of felonies. Her father lives there, and the mother said she lived with him part-time after her home was burglarized and she wanted her children to be safe. She told ABC News, quote, when my home got broken into, I felt it was my duty to do something else. Jury convicted her last week of two counts of tampering with records. Remember now, she still has other charges hanging over her and her sick father. Right? grand theft charges. What was the grand theft? Stealing the services of the school district. Anyway, a jury convicted her of two counts of tampering with records. She was sentenced 3 days later. That's according to the Akron Beacon Journal newspaper. She had to begin the sentence immediately, and she was taken from the courtroom sobbing. Before she was sentenced, she told the judge, quote, there was no intention at all, end quote, to deceive the school. She begged to be spared jail time. Her father, who's 64, went on trial with his daughter, but the jury deadlocked on the charge of grand theft. And in a jailhouse interview with the Akron newspaper, mom said she'd do it again if she had to. She said, quote, if I had the opportunity, if I had to do it all over again, would I have done it? After pausing, she answered, I would have done it again. But I would have been more detailed. I think they wanted to make an example of me. End quote. And the judge, remember the judge, Patricia Cosgrove, who was shocked that the prosecutors would not reduce it to misdemeanor and just get rid of the case. The judge said, quote, I felt that some punishment or deterrent was needed for other individuals who might think to defraud the various school districts. Some punishment or deterrent. And remember what the News Channel 5, the ABC affiliate there, reported that the school district spent $6,000 to bring her to trial. They hired a private investigator to follow her and videotape her. And this mom's case is the first residency challenge to reach a criminal courtroom, at least in this particular a state and school district. And remember, this is Ohio. Ohio has become a nest of fascism. The governor there, the new governor, John Kasich, who's as qualified to be governor of Ohio as he is qualified to be, an astronaut. John Kasich is a fraud, a phony. I know him. But in Ohio now, the example has been set. You do something like this, you're going to be sentenced to 5 years in jail. And if you have a compassionate judge like Judge Cosgrove here, she'll reduce the sentence to 10 days to serve. But your family will be destroyed. There'll be the chance that your sick father is going to be brought up on charges again. And the 12-year-old and the 6-year-old, they no longer are able to go to the two schools. They've been tossed out and been staying with their grandfather. And mom, she said, I'm upset because I've never been away from my family. Ten before the hour, I really, when I see a story like that about Kelly Williams Bowler and her two children, and what her motivation was to send her kids to a school district that she should not have sent her kids. And I think what motivated this crime, and then the conditions under which this woman, and the, you know, she has to live. There is a kicker to the story. The sentence puts this mother's teaching career at risk. She's close to graduating with an education degree from the University of Akron. And right now she's in jail right now, but she works as a special needs teaching assistant at a high school. And from the jail that she's been put in, she said, quote, "I'm not going to give up on my education," end quote. But the judge in this case said, as of now, she can't become a teacher. The judge said, quote, "Because of the felony conviction, you will not be allowed to get your teaching degree under Ohio law as it stands today. The court's taking into consideration that is also a punishment that you will have to serve," end quote. I agree with the question. Where do we live? What in the hell is this story about? Is it just plain old-fashioned racism dressed up with a painted face of the year 2011? Is that all it is? Just your standard garbage racism? Or is there more here to the story? Is there more than anyone wants to admit? Single mom, two kids, sends her children to a different school district. An illegal act. A crime. As you brain-addled, drug-saturated, freaked-out libertarian right-wing ghouls would be quick to point out to me.
Well, she broke the law, Mike.
And again, it recalls for me what Mario Savio said. This keeps coming. This is just haunting the hell out of me. And 1964, for God's sake. 1964, on the steps of Sproul Hall, University of California, Berkeley. When Savio said, "There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all." End quote, Mario Savio, December 2nd, 1964. 1964. Was that almost half a century ago? So again, you know, I started the story of this woman by saying that I did exactly the same thing. Exactly. 25 years ago. Exactly the same thing here in, well, actually it was in Atlanta. And nobody sent the videotape police after me or my son Chris. Nobody said anything when I got busted, when the principal, a youngish woman, called me into her office and said, "Mike, we know that you're using Chris's mother's address to send Chris to the school, and that's violating the law. So tell you what, Chris can continue to come here, but you're going to have to pay what we consider to be a tuition, since you live out of district. Oh, how much is that? $200 a month. Oh, okay. Now, Chris had been at the school for a year. Did I have to go back and pay the previous 9 months? Of course not. Never came up. So for the next roughly year and a half, 2 years, maybe max, until Chris moved on to middle school, I paid the $200 a month tuition. That was the end of it. I mean, that was the whole story. But I live in the racist South. This woman lives in the liberal state of Ohio. I'm joking, of course. So her teaching career, probably not going to happen. All right, President Obama, step up to the plate just once. Just once. Step up to the plate for this woman in Akron, Ohio. Come on, Mr. President. You can do it. Come on. Just do it. Give her a pardon. Now. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Want to lower the cost?